So how was your Christmas?
A bit rubbish, really, wasn't it? Couldn't go anywhere, couldn't see anybody. Managed to make the most of it, so it's pretty good. What about you?
Yeah, same. Had to change our plans at the last minute, as many people did. But what can you do? We're living in strange times at the moment. I did get out, though. I did get out after Christmas. I got snowed on.
Well, you got stuck in the snowdrift, didn't you?
Well, snowdrift is a bit of an exaggeration, but I did see some snow a couple of days ago. I was up in the hills above Eddington, and it was quite sunny, actually. Then out of the blue, this cloud came from nowhere, as it often does up there, and a little bit of rain came down. I thought, I better head down now. And as I was heading down, it turned into snow for about 2 minutes. So, yeah, I've seen my first snow of this December.
And I saw your little video on your Facebook site saying, help.
Yeah. Actually, I was more concerned about the mud up there. I mean, there is so muddy. I mean, I was sliding everywhere. I thought I was going to fall over and injure myself. But that's the hazard of walking in the countryside at this time of year, I guess. This is the Hidden Wiltshire podcast, and I am Glyn Coy, a photographer from Wiltshire.
And I am Paul Timlitz, also a photographer after a fashion, living in Wiltshire. I wouldn't say from Wiltshire, but I think they're going to carry me out of here, though. So,
yeah, I mean, I say from Wiltshire because I live here, but like you, Paul, I'm an interloper, really.
So, how did you get into this Hidden Wiltshire thing then, Glyn? How did you end up living here?
So, it's an interesting story because I worked in the IT industry for many years and was pretty much an early adopter of remote working. So when we were looking for a place to move to and raise a family, we got the map out and said, well, where can we go that's relatively rural but close enough to London to be able to get into the city quite quickly? And we just stumbled across Wiltshire, and that was it, really. There's no great design. But actually, I've got Wiltshire links from my past because I'm originally from the Liverpool area. My grandfather was working for the MOD during World War II, and he was moved down to Wiltshire. And he was an aerospace engineer, so he worked on Spitfire engines and travelled around the airfields in Wiltshire. And he lived in Chippenham. So I do have connections to here. So,
yeah, probably more than I do in that case. I think you win that one.
Thankfully, it's not a competition, though. So. You've got more years built up here than I have. So,
have I?
I'll give you that.
Well, I'm from Kent, so I can never remember if I'm a man of Kent or a Kentish man. But that's where I was born, and then brought up in Sussex, and then went to university in Bristol, and eventually ended up in Wiltshire. But I managed to get myself made redundant in 2018, which was wonderful. Prior to that, I worked in the city and commuted from Wiltshire to London every day. And then, like you, Glyn, became an early adopter of working from home. And before they knew it, nobody'd seen me for months. So it was quite easy to make me redundant. as I say, I think they'll carry me out of Wiltshire in a box. So.
Yeah, I think I'm stuck here now. I wouldn't live anywhere else, to be honest. I'm the person behind the sort of Hidden Wiltshire concept. I started up a few years ago. And I think about 2 years ago, Paul, you joined me along for the ride, really, didn't you? You started to get involved as well.
Yeah, I can't remember how I managed to fall into that trap, but I think I posted some photographs on the Facebook site.
Yeah, I think so. I think actually at the time I was looking for some volunteers because I'd spent about 2 years doing this and then thought, I just haven't got the time to get around as many places as I'd like to. And also, I'm sure I'm missing things. So I put out a sort of plea for help, really.
It was your hit list, wasn't it?
It was my hit list. Yeah, and we got a few people who were interested. And I think, you've managed to get out to quite a few different places and post walks and photographs at various places across Wiltshire, which has been really able to expand the breadth of the content, really.
Yeah, it's fortunately I've got a bit more time than you have, having been made redundant in 2018. So the upside to that was I could indulge my passion for walking and more importantly, taking photographs. So,
yeah, we have this kind of photo thing going on because I think both of us are photographers.
Yeah.
And for me, that's really what was the drive behind the site, was to actually take pictures of these places I was finding. And it grew out from there. Actually, it started because it must be about 3 or 4 years ago. I got a drone and shoved it up in the air above Biss Woods by West Ashton on the outskirts of Trowbridge, because that's some great colour there.
Yeah.
And the colours were amazing, and it looked like something you could have photographed in New England or something. And it was a bit strange for me to think this is a little wood on the edge of Trowbridge. So that started it. But I had this idea that, you know, there must be many other places out there that are surprising in Wiltshire that aren't really well known. So we have, you know, the normal tourist honey traps like Stonehenge and Avebury. But I was just interested to find some of the more hidden places. And that's really what the concept was about. And I started out with a drone thinking everything would look better from the air. And then I quickly realized that there's a lot of places in Wiltshire you can't fly the damn things because Salisbury Plain is a no-fly zone. But also, it looks good from the ground as well, Wiltshire. So that's really how it all started, and it's evolved from there, really.
I think it's sort of it's been interesting. So when I do my walks, which I write up as a blog and attach the photographs to and put on the website, it gives you a sort of completely different perspective when you're sort of walking around and think, well, everybody knows where, I don't know, Great Ridge is or Avebury or whatever. But so it makes you sort of start looking for things that are less well known. You go sort of ferreting around, and which is why if I do a 7-8 mile walk, it'll literally take me all day because you're sort of ferreting around and, you know, what, see what you can find, and then I'm taking photographs, and then I'm writing up the route, and it, you know, so it's quite a bit of work. But I mean, well, it's not work; it's just it's lovely. It's a great way to spend a day, but it's pretty time consuming, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And what I do is I wait for you to do the 7 or 8 mile walk, and then I take your route and follow it, so I don't take the whole day. But no, I mean, you've been able to find some really interesting places and out of the way places that people don't go so often, which is really what it's about. We're looking at finding those, you know, hidden gems, really. They're off the beaten track, and often you can find things even in some of the better known places. Like today, I thought we could have a conversation about that, the hills above Warminster and that area, because a lot of people know those, particularly locals know those places, because there's a lot of dog walkers that go up there, people from the towns walk up there. But when I was going up there, I was looking for things that were slightly strange or offbeat or not so well known, and really try and dig into those and find out a little bit more about them. For instance, one of the things that I picked up was Warminster surrounded by Iron Age hill forts. And yet you can see the hills, but when you get up there and you see what they actually look like in the landscape, they're quite impressive. And then it starts to get you thinking about who lived there and why they were built and how did those communities interact?
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. And I know we're going to talk about the hill forts, but it's just a great sort of segue into something I was thinking the other day. And I was redoing a walk that I'd done before in a place that we are going to talk about in another episode. But just standing there on a hill and thinking, you know, who was here 2,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago, and what their lives must have been like. And, you know, it's exactly the same over at Warminster, isn't it? I mean, the number of people that lived up there and the plains, Salisbury Plain, the Imber sort of range in particular, there's certainly a hell of a lot of more people living there now, then than there are now.
Most definitely. And I think the other thing to bear in mind when you're looking at the landscape is that, you know, whilst the Iron Age hill fort may be a snapshot of, you know, what life might have been like 2,000 years ago, of course, a lot of these sites have been occupied for thousands of years before. So you've got stuff going back to the Neolithic and Bronze Age and beyond. So you can almost see like there's a 2,000 to 3,000 window of these places being occupied. And now they're quite empty, and it's all military land, most of it.
Yeah, I was because we do a little bit of preparation for these podcasts. There's a little bit of homework. Most of it's just made up on the fly, which means it's complete.
Well, that's the thing. I think we have to qualify. We're not historians or archaeologists. No. We're enthusiastic amateurs, and we try and do our best. But if we make any boo-boos, do please let us know, and we'd be happy to correct.
But looking at, you know, for example, Scratchbury, I mean, I was reading yesterday that, I mean, there's, you know, Neolithic finds up there. So, I mean, you look at the Neolithic period, it's sort of 4,000 to 2,500 BC. I mean, you know, 6,000 years ago, there's people up there leaving bits of flint. I mean, it's just a mind-blowing thought, isn't it?
It is, it is. I think on Scratchbury, they found Neolithic axes.
Yeah.
A flint axe and a jade axe.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary. I mean, that's such a long time ago.
Yeah.
And also on Scratchbury, I find Scratchbury is quite interesting because you've got the raw shape of the Iron Age hill fort, but within it, and I got this from when I put my drone up there, you can actually see a sort of D-shaped enclosure on the top, which is some people have interpreted as far back as maybe the Neolithic times. Others interpret it as Bronze Age, but whatever, it was a long time ago. And it shows that that particular hill was occupied for a long time.
Mm. There was, I was reading sort of about the different sizes of hill forts, and, you know, as we'll sort of find as the podcast sort of develops, assuming we get beyond episode one, of course. There are hill forts of all sorts of sizes. But I read something saying that if it's over about 20 acres, which is quite big, then that makes it actually quite difficult to defend. And they were more likely to be sort of places where people lived and, you know, kept animals than they were, you know, it was more sort of that than a sort of defensive fortification. Of course, they had to be defended.
Yeah.
But you look at Scratchbury and Battlebury. I mean, you know, Scratchbury's what, 37 acres, Battlebury 23. So they would have been occupied for a long time.
Yeah, and I think Battlebury is interesting because the archaeology there has shown up some interesting finds. I know that outside of the fort, they found roundhouses. So it could be that you had communities living outside the fort, and maybe the fort was a gathering place, or I think Barry Cunliffe, the archaeologist, has suggested there may be places that people would retreat into the defence if they were attacked. But then when you see in Warminster, though, the thing that I find interesting is you've got Battlebury and Scratchbury, both hill forts separated by Middle Hill, but both within walking distance and within sight of each other. I just wondered whether they were like the same community or separate communities, or whether they collaborated or whether they hated each other. It's and then, of course, the other side of Warminster, you've got Clay Hill, another hill fort. So there's quite a few of them in the area.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing about the communication. I mean, you know, let's not forget that if you're looking at the Neolithic sort of 4,000 years ago up to sort of Iron Age and then Romano-British, you know, you're still looking at a time span of, two and a half thousand years. So whether they would have been occupied at the same time, now Scratchbury and Battlebury, you know, likely were, and Clay Hill as well. So again, you know, what was the communication between them? Were they lobbing arrows at each other all the time, or rocks or whatever, or were they part of the same extended family or community? I mean, it'd be great if people who know more about these things than us could sort of put us right. I guess the sort of the Facebook site is the place to do that.
Yeah, and that's probably a good segue into giving a plug for the Hidden Wiltshire locations on the internet. So if you want to contribute or, you know, ask some questions or get involved in any of the discussions, we have got the hiddenwiltshire.com website where we've got blog posts covering all of these places we're going to talk about, and you can leave comments there. We have a Facebook page, and we also have a Facebook group, which is a bit more interactive. And on there, you know, that'd be a good place to come and join and start to have some conversations about some of the things that we discuss on here.
A bit of a plea from me. If you want to become a contributor and join the Hidden Wiltshire group, which is a closed group, you are asked to answer a number of questions. And I think there's a message saying, you know, if you don't answer the questions, you don't get admitted to the group. And it's surprising how many people don't answer any questions or answer one. And I don't know whether they think, oh, this isn't what I bargained for, and then go away. But we have quite a lot of sort of outstanding applications where people just haven't answered the questions. And what we're really looking for is people who want to contribute. And bearing in mind or remembering that it is about a hidden wheelchair. So a picture of your dog walking around Avebury isn't really what we're looking for, because there's nothing hidden about that, apart from your dog maybe. But so it's the slightly unusual, and yeah, some great photographs and a bit of a story is really what we're after.
Yeah, and that's not to say that we're anti-dog. We love dogs. And actually, dogs can be good companions on some of these walks, but it's just about the staying true to the concept and trying to push out the content into, you know, new areas. I mean, we're always finding surprising things posted on the Facebook group that, you know, we don't know anything about, or, you know, someone just dropped something in. A great example was that water tower that John Gretsch put up on the A360. How many times have we driven past that and not even thought about it? And it's actually got a military history.
Yeah. I've driven past it hundreds of times. But did he suggest it's not there anymore?
No, it's still there. There were two buildings. One was the water tower and one was the pump house. The pump house is gone.
Yeah.
That's been demolished. And I think there's a worry that the water tower might go sometime soon. But it is one of those iconic buildings in the landscape that's been there for years. And we just drive past, and we don't often stop to think, well, what is it? What's it there for?
You sort of pay more attention to people coming out of Druid's Lodge on the other side of the road.
Yeah.
Pulled straight out into the traffic. It's 70, 80 miles an hour, and they just come out.
That's true.
And also pay more attention to the campervan place just before it. There's some beautiful campervan
conversions. Yeah, that's great.
Perhaps they'd like to sponsor us.
Yeah. but back to Scratchbury and Battlesbury. Actually, let's go to Battlesbury, because I discovered something yesterday that I wasn't aware of that was quite sinister. Just by the northwest entrance, I think it was, they found like a mass grave. A lot of men, women, and children buried. And it's led to some to speculate one of two things. You know, was there a Roman massacre that came through and took place on the site, or was it an intertribe piece of warfare? I guess we don't know. But I mean, I spoke to my son about it when I went for a walk up there with him, and he's got an archaeology degree, so knows far more than I do about these things. But he was telling me that it's believed that the hill forts were pretty much abandoned by the time the Romans came into Britain in earnest. So that's a bit of a mystery, that one. But it does, you know, ask questions. What was going on around Warminster in those days?
I think hit on an important point there. A lot of people don't realise, or maybe they do, but that the Romans were pretty sort of shameless, and if they saw a good, a nice hill fort, then they'd come along hundreds of years later, and or even at the same time, and occupy it. You know, they knew a good location when they saw it, and clearly Iron Age and Bronze Age people did as well. So that's why you get sort of evidence of occupation over hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, the Iron Age people moved there, live there, and then the Romans come along and think this is a great location. We can see for miles. We can defend it. So, you know, we'll develop it as a location. And as an archaeologist, it must be a hell of a job trying to pick all that apart.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Romans are very good at what they would call today cultural appropriation.
Yes,
but it is interesting, because I know that up on Salisbury Plain there are a number of Romano-British settlements. Which were evidenced in the landscape. I know over by above Nook, by Nook Castle, which is kind of an earthwork, which is a bit like a hill fort, but not quite as big. It's probably an animal enclosure. But there are two Romano-British settlements up there.
Hmm.
And then again, just beyond there, you've got a Long Barrow, half of which has been blown up by the army at some point.
Yes.
Nook Long Barrow. And that's another interesting thing, because one thing, if you notice, if you walk up on the hills around Warminster, and this is particularly around Scratchbury and Battlesbury, you see these metal poles with a metal star on top, just stuck into the ground. And for a while, when I kept walking up there, I was thinking, what are these poles doing up here? And then I found out that they're put up to mark places of archaeological significance. And they're really there to deter the army from blowing them up or, you know, dropping heavy ordnance on them. It's just to let the army know, you know, don't go here.
Or running a tank over it.
Yeah, so, running a tank over it. Because there is another one. If you go over past Scratchbury Hill onto beyond, there's Cotley Hill. And on the top of Cotley Hill, just above Heytesbury, there is a barrow. And the barrow is surrounded by wooden posts and a sign there saying that's saying no tanks. So yeah, yeah. I think it is a hazard.
Well, there's I think they call them no dig zones as well, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah,
some of them actually it says no dig.
Yeah,
but I mean, I was out walking with some friends yesterday. Obviously, we kept apart and all that stuff, but we did a walk on the plains near where I live, and I've seen it dozens of times, but there's a little sort of mound and there's white posts all around it, and as you described it, the little silver star thing plonked right in the middle of it, and you quite often see this sort of infantry sort of running across there, sort of firing blanks at each other, but then they all do sort of skirt around this little no dig zone and off into the woods. But
yeah,
they do seem to sort of mostly respect it. But then there are other places. I don't know. Part of what I do is I'm a volunteer for Natural England, so I work at Parsonage Down Nature Reserve, which is just outside Shrewton. And part of the work we do is I've been going out onto the Imber Range on Salisbury Plain, and we do mammal surveys. And, you know, we sort of trap shrews and voles and things and sort of check the condition and the age and the sex and then release them again. And when I've been out there, I mean, Imber Range is, you know, it's just off limits pretty much all the time. But there's a great sort of long barracled bowls barrow, which is way out on Imber Range. And clearly somebody's gone over it in a tank at some point. We've just gone straight through the middle of it. but as somebody said to me, a friend of mine who was a tank commander, he said, once you're sort of, you know, battened down and you've got all the hatches shut, I mean, you can't see a thing in a tank. So it's hardly surprising they run over the old artifact.
Yeah, but I've heard that they're much better now at protecting and conserving what's there. I mean, the MOD do have a full-time archaeologist. And you know, he's a guy I've seen on television shows and is from Wiltshire. It's a chap called Richard Osgood. I think he's got quite a wide remit because it's the whole of the MOD land, not just Salisbury Plain, of course. But they do have quite a lot of interactions with the archaeologists and Wiltshire Council. So they do know what's out there. What's been surveyed and captured is now protected as best as they can. I believe that in the old days when they first started protecting this stuff, some of the old timers were getting a little bit upset about not being able to use the barrows as artillery practice. So things have changed quite a bit.
Well, let's face it, if you can't hit a long barrow, then there's no hope.
Yeah. And there are quite a few long barrows on Salisbury Plain. I can't remember the exact number, but there's quite a lot that the MOD have to protect. And some of them are in really, really rural locations. Mm. Particularly, I think there's one over on Blackheath, which is about as remote as you can get.
Well, I think in a later episode, we're going to talk quite a lot about Salisbury Plain. And yeah. I think the plans also for these podcasts is that we bring in guests from time to time. And I have a friend of mine who works with us up at Parsonage Down, who is a retired archaeologist. So he knows this area very well. And, you know, maybe that's a guest for the future as we bring him in to talk about some of the archaeology out there. Particularly Blackheath, because that's not far from where we live here.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be great. I think that'll be good to kind of get other people in that have more expertise than we have to talk about these technical subjects.
Well, that's not difficult, is it?
No, it's not.
They have more expertise than we do. So.
It's not. But The other thing about Scratchbury is an interesting one to me. I actually prefer Scratchbury to Battlesbury. It's my favourite place to go and walk around a hill for, because it's that little bit further out from the town of Warminster. So you get less people up there. It just feels more remote, and the views across to Salisbury Plain on one side and over towards the Deverells on the other is just fantastic. Mm. I mean, you can see all the way over to the Long Barrow on Cold Kitchen Hill above Kingston Deverell over that way. And I've taken a shot up there with my zoom lens where I've zoomed right in on the Barrow, and it looks fantastic from that angle.
Yeah.
But it's really good up there. But actually, Scratchbury has also got a more recent history, because it was the subject of a poem by the war poet Siegfried Sassoon, who wrote this poem on Scratchbury Hill. Because, of course, he lived in Heytesbury.
Yeah,
he used to own Heytesbury House.
Yep.
So he has a lot of history in the area. And actually, a good few years ago, I think his son inherited the house and was very against the A36 route that was built right across the land of the house and separated the house from the village. Because I know that's another thing, is if you're doing a walk in this area, you can drop down from Cotley Hill into Heytesbury, and there's a couple of good pubs in Heytesbury. And in normal times, you can have a liquid refreshment.
Yes.
You'd have to have a Scotch egg or something with it at the moment.
Well, several Scotch eggs, I think.
But the only thing I would say with that is that I did it recently. I parked up in Heytesbury and walked up Cotley Hill and to get up to Scratchbury, and you have to cross the A36, and goodness me, we need a bridge or something over there. That is a dangerous road to cross as a pedestrian.
It's a shocking road. Although it always makes me smile over at what's the village called? A bit further east of Heytesbury. Is it Upton Lovell? Where there is also a very good pub.
Yeah.
But there must be somebody very important there, because they've managed to get some traffic lights installed on the A36.
Yeah.
Just so that you can get out of Upton Lovell.
Yeah, yeah. I know, because there's so many dodgy turnings there.
Yeah.
I know I used to, well, a couple of times a year, I go over to Nook to do some livestock spotting for Wiltshire Wildlife Trust. And when you come out of Nook and you have to turn right onto the A36 to get back towards Warminster, that's a dodgy turning as well. There's been quite a few accidents there over the years.
Yeah, it's nasty. But so Clay Hill,
you mentioned
a little bit earlier, and I have to admit that I've lived in Wiltshire for 26 years now, which is longer than I've lived anywhere else in my life, and I've never been up Clay Hill.
Clay Hill?
No.
You must be the only person in Wiltshire that hasn't. The car park's always jammed.
But it's not just persons. I mean, it's aliens as well. Is that right? So it's a UFO.
Yes. It's a UFO hotspot. I'm not sure if many people know this, but around Warminster in the 1970s, Warminster was a UFO hotspot. And people used to gather from far and wide at these UFO spotting gatherings. And Clay Hill was very much part of that.
You don't think it's got anything to do with what the army are up to?
Well, it could be. I tell you what, though, there's a guy local to that area who flies planes, and he loads these planes up with these like fireworks and all sorts of explosions and things like that. And it's his thing. He goes around air shows doing these sort of at dusk, flies his plane around and throwing off all these fireworks. And I've seen him a few times doing it above Clay Hill, and every time people on Facebook going, has anyone seen a UFO above Clay Hill? And it's the man in the plane with the pyrotechnics. But it looks pretty impressive, I have to say. I've seen it a few times over the years.
He's still doing it, is he?
Yeah, he's still doing it. I saw him do it a few months ago, yeah.
How the hell did you get away with that?
I've no idea. But yeah, it's this pyrotechnic aeroplane guy. Does it? And I think he's probably been responsible for the recent any recent UFO sightings up there. But yeah, I it's funny, because a few years ago I was up over on another hill fort not so far from Warminster, over at Westbury White Horse, and I was flying my drone up there, and when I was going through the footage afterwards, I noticed this small white object fly underneath my drone. So I put it up on YouTube and said, anyone got any idea what this is? And it got picked up by the Wiltshire Times. And the next thing you know, it was a headline saying, UFO shot over the Westbury White Horse.
And it was just a seagull.
I think it was a moth or something. I don't know. But it was, I just put it up provocatively. It's like, oh, UFO. And it got picked up by all these UFO sites and shared around the world. It was just quite funny how these things can go viral.
Oh, God, that was a whole new different subject, which could get very controversial, so I won't even go there.
It could. But the other thing you see up in that side of the world is you're very, very close to Salisbury Plain. You're right on the edge of the Imber Range, which is off limits for most of the year. But I often see this from where I live, because I'm on the outskirts of Trowbridge, and from the top of my house, I can look across and see the escarpments of Salisbury Plain. But when there's military activity up there, like there has been recently, you see quite a lot of flares put up at night, and you hear artillery, machine guns and everything. It's quite an active military area, so not a place to go wandering if you don't know what you're doing.
As you know, Glyn, I live on Salisbury, or a village on Salisbury Plain, or right on the edge of it. So, you know, it's you cease to take much notice of it. After a few years, it's just almost an everyday occurrence at certain times of the year.
Yeah. It can get very loud.
Well, it's a funny story there. When we first moved to, so I live in Shrewton, and when we first moved here 26 years ago, my wife and I came to look at the house that we ended up buying, which is a little thatched cottage. And it was sort of summertime, and this lovely lady who was a retired teacher lived there, and so we went to look at the house, and she said, "Oh, come in the garden and have a cup of tea." So we're sitting in the beautiful summer's day having a cup of tea in the garden, and then there was this enormous bang, and my wife literally fell off her chair, and I turned around and said, "What the hell was that?" And she looked at me and said, "What?" And she hadn't even noticed it. And she said, "Oh, that's just the guns. You get used to that." But I can't remember what our reaction was, whether we thought, "What on earth are we doing?" But I mean, at times the windows shake, the doors shake, and the big exercise that has just finished here, Wessex Storm, which went on for a month, the noise was incredible. But, you know, it's a small price to pay to live here, I think.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we often get the windows rattling and things like that. And but you do get used to it. You just switch off. And the best thing for me is, or the most interesting thing, is seeing the light shows at night when they're doing the sort of night maneuvers. But they do all sorts of funny things up there that can impact on the local area. I know they've had issues with fires in the past. And I remember a couple of years ago, Trowbridge was absolutely covered in dense smoke, and people were calling up the fire brigade saying, "What the hell's going on? What is this?" And what it was, there was a fire up on Salisbury Plain, and the wind just blew the smoke into the town.
Yeah, I remember driving up the A360 from heading towards Devizes from Shrewton, and it was just like a thick fog. And I think they actually closed the road eventually, and they were telling people to shut their windows. But that's for another podcast, I think.
Indeed.
The Salisbury Plain one.
Yeah, Salisbury Plain. It's funny, though, because all these things, I think, will kind of punch out into different areas for future podcasts, because it's all that this is the thing is, and this is the great thing for me about Hidden Wiltshire, is that as I've gone around, I've been able to find these places and sort of connect the landscape up in my mind. It's like a jigsaw puzzle, and you can link these different bits to each other, and you can start to imagine how these communities would have been connected to the landscape and moved through it, and how every bit of the landscape has an impact. Like, for instance, you know, if you look around a lot of the hills, the hill summits in Wiltshire, you'll see long barrows strategically placed because they're very visible to be seen. But going back to the Warminster area, I did a great walk. And this is a great circular walk of mine that I put up on the website, where you start off on the outskirts of Warminster by Battlesby Road. There's a sort of tank road there that goes off the road, and a lot of locals will park there, so you see cars park. But you can walk there directly up to Battlesbury and do a circuit of Battlesbury. And as you do that, you'll start to see the scale of the ramparts. I mean, they're huge. There's huge gouges out of the landscape, out of the hit side of the hill. When you think they didn't use JCBs or anything back then, it would all been done by hand.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. So they're digging out this defensive rampart, which is still intact and still there. And then as you look around, when you're on the summit, you can look around and you can look across to Scratchbury and Middle Hill. And you start to see other things in the landscape. And when you've got the map with you, the Ordnance Survey map, you can see they have names. And one thing that's very prominent up there, particularly on the side of Middle Hill, are what are called strip lynchets. And you see a lot of these in certainly in the Wiltshire landscape. And as far as I can make out, and they don't know for sure, but they seem to be some kind of an agricultural thing from the post-Roman period, maybe the medieval England, or maybe even early, who knows? But you can see they're like flat terraces cut into the side of hills.
Yeah, I think they were for sort of, it made sort of cultivating the land easier. These sort of little, as you say, flat terraces. And they're never very wide, are they?
No.
It's sort of, I don't know, what, a metre and a half wide?
Yeah, yeah.
But I suppose, I guess it's an indication of how sort of marginal some of the land was. So to have to sort of cultivate something on a steep hillside, they must have felt that it was worth making that sort of effort to level these little terraces out.
Yeah.
So there's strip lynchets on Battlesbury, did you say?
They are on, as you stand on the top of Battlesbury and look across the Middle Hill, which is the hill in between Battlesbury and Scratchbury. Middle Hill on the left-hand side has got these very, very prominent strip lynchets.
Yeah.
But as you look from Battlesbury towards the other side of the valley, which is across the Salisbury Plain, there are also quite a lot of strip lynchets marked into the hillside there. So if you have the Ordnance Survey map, it marks them out, so you can actually see them.
Yeah.
But they're very prominent around there.
Mm. And, of course, the other, I think you sort of touched upon, sort of, you know, we talked about communications and sort of how people moved around. And again, it's for a later episode. You know, the whole issue of sort of droveways and the different routes around the country and the old roads is just a massive subject. And, you know, books have been written about it. And one of our chums on the Hidden Wiltshire Facebook group, you know, the closed group, a chap called Steve Dewey. I mean, it'd be great to get him on. We haven't told him about this, but if Steve would like to come along and talk to us about what he's found, because he spends a lot of time driving these old routes and putting it all together. So there you go, Steve, invitation for you.
And the interesting thing about that is actually some of these old routes were the old main roads. And when you look at them now, you can't quite imagine that because some of them are pretty dire.
Yeah.
I mean, that road that goes across Blackheath is, you take your life into your own hands driving on that. I know Steve does it because he's got a 4x4, but,
yeah.
You know, that would have been a main route at one point.
Yeah.
For the coaches.
Yeah.
So I think we've reached the point now where we've pretty much covered as much as we can on Battlesbury and Scratchbury and those hill forts around Warminster. So we can wrap up this first podcast and think about what we're going to talk about next time, which will be in 2 weeks. So what we'll do is we'll push out from Scratchbury up towards Nook, because there's some interesting earthworks up there. There's a hill fort and various things. And from Nook, we can then push up across the plains to Imber, the lost village of Imber, which is quite interesting. It's a place that many people know about, but getting into it is not so easy because it's off limits for most of the year, but we can talk about that in the next podcast, Paul.
Yeah, and I think when this show goes out, which is the 2nd, I think, of January, Imber will have just possibly have just shut down because I think it opens around sort of New Year. So, you know, maybe one or two people who have been out there and seen it for themselves. I just want to give a sort of a name check really for sort of the hidden third member of the team. It's the guy that's written the music, which we're going to use as our sort of theme tune for these episodes, and hopefully build in more of his sort of sound and music as time goes by into later episodes. And that's a good mate of mine, Steve Dixon, who's one of those people you just got to hate because he's multi-talented. Not only is he a brilliant musician or sound artist, as he describes himself, he's also a damn good photographer, and he's a graphic designer. So he's a sort of self-employed graphic designer. So if you like the music, Steve can be found on SoundCloud, if you go to SoundCloud, where you can find him under the name River and Rail. Not quite sure where that comes from. On Instagram, if you want to see some of his photographs, it's Steve Dixon, which is D-I-X-O-N underscore creative. And if you're looking for a graphic designer, then it's stevedixoncreative.co.uk. So thank you, Steve.
And the other thing is, of course, Steve is from Wiltshire.
He is.
Just like you and I, lives and breathes Wiltshire. So it's great to have him on board and helping us with this.
What Steve does have over us is he's actually born here, I think. I think he's born in...
We're immigrants.
We're expats.
Expats. All right. Okay, thanks for listening, everyone. See you in 2 weeks.
Bye now.